And welcome to Lunch with Leon. It's Leon Daniels here with my regular podcast, where I invite you to join a private lunch with one of my friends from the world of transport. Lunch with Leon is sponsored by Total Care, the experts in lifting and testing equipment for commercial vehicle workshops. Total Care has been supporting the passenger and commercial transport industry for decades. In fact, this year, they're celebrating the 40th anniversary of supplying their popular mobile column lifts in the UK. And we're really delighted to have them sponsoring our lunch. My guest today is an economist by background. Elizabeth de Jong has a strong track record of leading successful policy teams. She has over 20 years of experience at a senior level in the transport sector, which includes consultancy, business analysis, program management, policy development, and policy delivery. She joined Logistics UK in July 2017 from the Rail Delivery Group, where she was Director of Policy, and prior to that, she was working at the Department for Transport. At Logistics UK, she's responsible for UK, regional, EU and international policy, public affairs, research and information, as well as the Member Advice Centre. We had our lunch a couple of weeks ago, just after Logistics UK had their Future Logistics Conference and in the week when the government published its 10-point plan for zero carbon. So, Elizabeth, Logistics UK is the new name for the Freight Transport Association. So you've had that big relaunch and we've had the coronavirus. So I was going to ask you, how was your year?
So it's been absolutely frantic. But in some ways, that's been a privilege as well, because we are at the centre of so many things. So COVID, we were at the centre of that, making sure that logistics could keep moving, making sure the medicines arrive, making sure that all the regs and so on were in place to support the industry. So that through that time, so that was a privilege, absolutely. And then we've gone from COVID straight on full steam ahead to Brexit, and with the government's usual work on things like the future of freight and decarbonisation. So it's been quite a different time, and in some ways only deliverable for us because we've all worked at home and become so much more productive because of it.
I was going to ask you about that, because for a membership organisation, you think in terms of public events and dinners and speaking engagements and conferences and so on. But you say that working from home has been so much better.
So it's been so much better for things such as government influence, government liaison over regulatory things around COVID, making sure things are in place for Brexit, because the efficiency of one's diary is quite different without the travel. So you're able to fit in so many more things. And also as a policy team, we have had a call every day for half an hour. And that has been, what are we focusing on today? What's the outputs? What's the latest news? And it's really allowed us to work at the type of pace required to deliver for our members at the moment. Clearly, we miss the member engagement and we've been trying different things for that. But we will be delighted to see our members again face to face. We can't quite replace that.
No, for sure. I've heard lots of people say that, and I've experienced it too. I do a once a month board meeting with somebody who's across town. So typically, I would leave home at 9:30, get there 10:30. The board starts at 11, finishes at 2:30, 3 o'clock before I leave, back home by 4. That is the day gone. Whereas now it is only just the 3 hours and I get a lot of stuff done before and afterwards. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to doing things in 3D. I don't know about you. I worry sometimes about how young people in our organizations learn, because, you know, they watch how we behave and they watch how we interact and they sit in the meetings and so on. So we'll need to get back to some sort of working together, won't we? Certainly for the people, the young people to learn, and also for the creative bit of what we do. It's a bit hard to be creative on Zoom.
Yes, I think so. I think it has its limitations, but it's definitely going to be part of the mix for when we go forward. It really will change how we work. We'll be getting together for those meetings, those creativities, probably for lots of day-long workshops where we're looking at things. But day-to-day, this is working well too.
It is. And I was thinking about the whole coronavirus business, which is that if we'd had this virus 10 years ago, it's probable that the online shopping capacity in terms of deliveries to our homes and so on wouldn't have been developed enough to have done what we've done in 2020, because 10 years ago, our capacity to online shop was much more limited, wasn't it? That would have been a different story.
Yes, that would have been very different, because already the whole sector, so I think it's been up to 50%, some people say 40%. There's so many different statistics around about how much it has increased and did increase during that time. But we would have been going from such a low base, so we would just be queuing for a lot longer, more frequently, I would suggest. Yeah. It has such a difference, and probably the economic impact therefore would have been so much greater. Clearly it has been very great, and part of the work we've been doing on COVID after we'd been focusing on the regulatory and practical aspects really turned to economic recovery and monitoring the finances of our industry so that we could be confident that it would be there to support the rest of the economy and for its own well-being too.
Sure. I was also thinking we are going to spend some time, aren't we, when all this is over, as far as it ever will be, looking back and seeing what we learned. I've got money on the fact I think the government will declare the freight and logistics sector as critical infrastructure, like telecoms and energy. What do you think?
Well, I'd be delighted, because that's what we've put in our recent consultation on the planning framework, critical infrastructure. I'm also hoping, I think this week I saw something launched, which was the new emergency response unit. It had lots of professors of various things joining it, but I'm hoping there's some professors of logistics invited in to be part of the emergency response group that's been set up.
Yeah, I mean, the industry certainly acquitted itself brilliantly, hasn't it? Everything from delivering goods to people's homes, but also essential things, food and other supplies. I mean, it has just been, it's been extraordinary.
It has been.
You must be very proud of what the industry's achieved.
Absolutely. And it's the resilience and flexibility for me. And also I'm delighted for the industry, because it's been able to have both government spotlight and also the rest of society seeing what it can do. It really has almost been the day-to-day contact that some people have had from that outside world, and kept going through all the difficulties. It didn't give up at all, and I'm hoping that then reaps rewards in terms of attractiveness of the sector in the future, ability to recruit people. We've got driver shortages in particular, but I'm really hoping that we can build on this, and Logistics UK will be doing that in terms of careers, attractiveness, come and join our sector.
Yes, and you know, that's one of the things, as you know, I'm really strong about how in particular we get more women and more people from diverse backgrounds into the whole sector, certainly at managerial and senior manager level as well. And I'm also equally keen how we get people into civil engineering and highway engineering, and for that matter, railway engineering and so on. I mean, you're a successful woman in the transport sector with a great CV. What else do you think we should be doing?
So I look at it from the point of view of Logistics UK, and I think, what is our role? And quite often I'll describe the work that a trade association does. So there's things that businesses control, so what they pay their staff, who they employ, what they invest, where they source their raw materials. And there are things that businesses find harder to control around their business environment, and that's typically taxation, spending on infrastructure, regulation, legislation, education. And we work in that area, helping businesses to control their trading environment. So when I think about a diversity in our industry, I think from a business point of view, we know that there is an amazing business case for diversity. So you get a larger pool of talent, more people to access than your limited pool of people who are alike, and you get better decision making. And that's many studies to show that that's fact. So there's a great business case for businesses anyway in regard to diversity. So almost, I think, what does a trade association need to do about the business environment? What's blocking diversity from that business environment point of view? And there's a couple of areas that we are looking at, actually. And one is about the general attractiveness of the industry. And one of the biggest things, blocker that I think there is to women joining is about driver facilities. So we know about 14,000 too few parking areas for the industry each night to have their legally required rest breaks. We have seen drivers, lorries, and lay-bys. If you think about it, where do they go to the loo? Where do they wash? What other industry expects their workers to be in those conditions? So there are now fewer than 1%. It's not measurable. Women lorry drivers working commercially. And the pool of men who will put up with those conditions is quite small as well, I suggest. So that's one of our big areas of focus at the moment, those driver facilities. And I think it will lift the whole image of the industry and allow a more diverse workforce, because that makes better sense for all businesses.
Yeah, that would just be positively illegal if this was a warehouse or a factory or any other place of work, wouldn't it? And we had something a bit similar with bus, because again, the level of facilities provided were very low, but at least at night, the buses go back to the garage and so on. But facilities for during the day, including eating, drinking, sitting down and resting, as opposed to just being dumped in the high street at 7 o'clock in the evening, was very, very important. But there has been loads of progress, but I get exactly what you mean then of in the freight and logistics side, which is these vehicle movements are to some extent a bit random, and therefore arranging those sorts of facilities is a different sort of challenge. That is really interesting. So Logistics UK is campaigning in particular in that space.
Yes, that's one of my big areas where I'm really wanting to see breakthrough. So I had a meeting with Highways England to see how they're progressing driver facilities. It's something we talk about all the time. And DFT started a study with their non-executive director about delivering these. So there's a well-accepted gap in our industry and a real issue for recruitment.
Yeah, and I was also thinking about young people, because in my slightly stereotyped mind, young people want to go into something that's sort of space age and exciting and involves computers and data processing and things. And to some extent, the freight logistics sector looks a bit more brutal and a bit more hands-on than that. But there are, in fact, lots of really exciting jobs for young people in the sector, aren't there?
Absolutely. So the focus on the future of freight is very attractive. So the ITT hub and the conference that you and I are both involved with will really help bring that to life. So there's so many jobs which require mathematical minds, optimizing efficiency, and then also all the exciting developments about different modes of transport in the future and the great challenge of decarbonizing. There's so many interesting jobs that will really attract your intellect and creativity in logistics.
No, I bet that would be good. And I was going to talk to you about ITT Hub 2021, because Logistics UK is putting on the whole thought leadership part of that show. Anything we can look forward to?
So we're going to be building on the Future Logistics Conference that we had a week or so ago. And one of the great breakthroughs, I think, that the hub will achieve is bringing together transport and energy and digital and planning and policies. So quite often we'll go to a conference and it will look at one of those things. But the great exciting thing about the ITT Hub is that all of those are being brought together. And we're going to be building on those. I think the four themes we're going to be looking at, which future vehicles and, of course, fuel, future data, future business strategies, future communities. And I'm very keen to have lots of different formats. So how-to sessions, case studies, debates, panels, keynotes, speeches. So lots of different formats to keep the energy going as well. We're going to keep it quieter to starter level, because there are lots of potential visitors asking, what should I do? Where do I go? What do I need to be doing in my company? So it should be accessible to people too. That's my vision.
You and I are allowed to give a plug for ITT Hub, because You and I are both involved in it. You and I are both on the advisory board. You're planning the thought leadership part of it as well. I've got in my mind that ITT Hub 2021 will be the first major event that people will be able to go to after the COVID business has settled itself down a bit. So it'll be the first time probably for 18 months, 2 years, before people have been able to go to a real live event with real live equipment, real live people. And for me, what I love about all these shows, of course, is I'm always looking around to see what it can do for my business, or secondly, what threats are coming down the line and what things I have to be ready for. So I'm expecting a huge surge of enthusiasm, which is people have, for the last year or so now, not had the opportunity to go really and learn about some of this stuff. And the other reason, as you say, about bringing all this together, we know about one of these things, but in the transport side, how much do we really know about energy? How much do we know about the data handlers? How much do we know about the disruptors? So I think it's going to be a great event. I'm praying that the lockdown comes to an end early enough so that both the exhibitors and the visitors can come and have a cracking good show. And do you remember giving out business cards? We used to do that. That's a whole new opportunity.
In the cupboard behind me.
I know. So I think it'll be good, and it will be just a place where we can listen to some really great presentations, and I'm looking forward to it enormously. So the other thing that's happened to us this week is we've had the government's 10-point plan for the green industrial revolution. It's 38 pages for those people who haven't read it, but fortunately some other people have read it or speed read it anyway. And the government is really threatening to put some money into the system starting next year. And in particular, there's a big push there for hydrogen. There's the big potential for gigafactories to start to produce batteries for battery electric vehicles at scale, big push for the vehicle manufacturers. But the deadlines we've got, which are 2030 for petrol and diesel, they don't apply to heavy goods vehicles, Elizabeth. That's right, isn't it? That's still to
that's
come.
Right, but what we've what was announced, even though it had brackets around saying date to be determined or date undecided, was there is going to be a consultation about how to phase out diesel and diesel HGVs. So that's a focus for us, but we're also multimodal. So we were very pleased about some of the multimodal expenditure as well. So we generally welcomed it very much indeed. But we do know that path to HGV and the futures of HGV and decarbonising HGV is a real focus for our industry, because we haven't got a solution and there's still many different options. So one of the things when the consultation does launch is that we'll be wanting to make sure that there are practical alternatives to petrol, diesel HGVs before a phase out of those vehicles is considered. But we really want to work with government on that and really make sure that there is a pathway. So as usual, we work really closely with government. We are helpers of government because we want government to succeed, because we want our industry to succeed. So we're always looking at how we can help them land their policies.
So you and I were both at the Future Logistics Conference exactly a week ago. So we witnessed, as always, the inevitable battle between the battery electric people and the hydrogen people, the people advocating putting up overhead wires on motorways so that HGVs can travel using electricity, versus the statistic which I've heard quoted, that 80% of all HGVs fuel at only 80 filling stations, and therefore that's all you need to do. So it was a good old argument, but I don't know about you, it seems to me people start in the wrong place. So I keep trying to remind myself that there's free energy in the space of the sun and the wind, and we've got wheels that we need to rotate. And we should be really thinking about the best way to move that free energy in such a way as to make the wheels go around in the way we want them to go around. So that inevitably is going to be different for a light vehicle that goes home every night to something that's a much heavier vehicle that's going to travel 500 miles and be away from home at night. It seems to me, I don't know what you think, but some people seem to start halfway through that argument. We ought to start back at basics.
Yeah, so I probably go back to basics. We always go back to basics in the future when we think about the future. So we go back to, what does our industry need to secure its future and to be a great industry to survive and to thrive? And we tend to boil it down to four attributes. So flexible and resilient, recognised in its value, optimal in its efficiency, and then the working towards zero negativities for safety and environmental. So if we just take the environmental, we need to be delivering that in a way that allows the industry to optimise its efficiency, so still to be efficient, also to be recognised its value, which I'm actually less concerned about. It will help us with our value, but also to be flexible and resilient for whatever the future holds, whatever different patterns of consumption, production, trade are ahead. So I would go back to those principles around efficiency and around flexibility and resilience, and then design what the stuff looks like that we use. But in terms of thinking about what type of technology, what type of energy we use in the future, in order to be efficient and deliver in the timescales, I'm afraid we're going to have to start backing horses. It's very unpopular with a large number of people. But I think some demonstrator projects, and then we're going to have to go for it. I just can't see the market being able to meet the timelines unless we make some critical early decisions about what direction we're going through. It would be so inefficient to have all the wasted investments in the ones that don't make the final cut at the end of the day.
Okay, so some demonstration projects to just learn everything there is to learn before we end up too far down the line. That makes sense. Well, it was interesting because the debate continues in respect of HGV, the government's document. The door is still open in terms of what the deadline for that. But for smaller vehicles, it makes the point there's 100 different types of small EV available, both cars and vans in the UK market. So I'm sure that the progress is going to be huge. I was also interested that a number of the traditional automotive sector members pressed for an early adoption date for the smaller vehicles because they just don't want to run two product lines simultaneously, the electric one and the petrol or diesel one. So I expected the automotive to ask for the latest possible date, but from what I read, that some of them want the earliest.
Yes, I can see that. I can also see that's great for your business when you're doing that, just running that. So it's very, very rational decision. We need that joined up approach with the energy companies, which we were talking about. That's what the ITT hub brings together, because currently the biggest issue that our members have, they would love to have more electric vans, absolutely love it, but it's the funding of upgrades which is the real blocker for them. So if there's insufficient energy supply, then the first user of that, so the first company to get it in their depot, has to pay for the cost of that, and subsequent users the marginal cost, and that just makes it unaffordable and an inefficient business model as well. So if we can crack a better way of paying, then I think we're going to take off so quickly at that lower, lighter end.
I think the other reason why this is so important is that, of course, younger people view this slightly differently to older people. So younger people are indeed even more environmentally sensitive. So younger people, if we had them in a room, would urge us to press on with the decarbonisation as fast as possible, because their environmental credentials, if you like, are a bit stronger than some of the older people I hear. Older and more established people say, this is all too expensive, it'll never catch on, and I'm going to put my head in the sand. But with the passage of time, of course, those young people who are pressing us to move quickly will become the managers and will become the entrepreneurs and will become the senior people in the future, won't they? So this is going to happen. There's no way back.
No, well, it's the right thing to do, but I like to reclaim the desire to do it to an older generation. I don't like to say we're doing it because of younger people, because unfortunately, Leon, I have three younger people in my household, and if I could get one of them to switch off the light or do the recycling. I'd be delighted. So I'm going to claim that back. We're not doing it for the younger people. We're doing it because it's the right thing to do. Okay. Essay.
No, absolutely. I understand. I understand entirely. And you are correct, of course. We're not doing it just because people are more environmentally sensitive when they're younger. It is absolutely the right thing to do because it's a planet we all have to live on. And as somebody once said rather beautifully, that we don't own the planet, we simply keep it in trust for the future and for the next generation. So I think that's very true. So I've saved the best till last, Elizabeth, because I know that people are just bursting to know what's going to happen with Brexit. And of course, we don't really know. I was talking to my old friend John Smith at GB Rail Freight, who was telling me that his trains from Felixstowe docks at night are leaving partially empty because the docks are now so congested they can't move the boxes around fast enough to get the right ones for the train on the train before it has to go. We've now got ships, I see, being diverted to Rotterdam or holding off from unloading because of congestion. And some of that congestion is stockpiling for 31st of December, as well as some of it being PPE and so on. And at our conference last week, we heard, didn't we, from the ports, we heard from Humber and from Dover, and we learnt a number of other things. So as far as Logistics UK is concerned, members must be looking to you and pleading with you to tell them what's going to happen, which must be a hard question.
So what we face two ways. We face towards government and we face towards our members. And for Brexit, that two-way interface is is very, very apparent. So we're wanting to get all the information that our members need and all the systems ready that our members need, but it's not all in our hands. So it's a lot of things needing to come from government. And I did a transport select, well, an EU exit select committee last week, and was able to bring my thoughts together on where we are in terms of EU exit readiness. So I was feeling confident about systems and infrastructure for EU-GB trade, but high levels of concern around gaps in important information provision. So it's actually the information we're going that's so vital at this moment. There are going to be huge changes to 8,000 haulage businesses, 200,000 trading businesses, a brand new supply chain in paperwork using brand new systems, all of which we wouldn't be doing it this way if it was our company, because it's far too last minute for any of us to be comfortable with at all. So it's the information that we're particularly pushing on this this week. It could change next week. But the other area is GBNI, so flows towards Great Britain and Northern Ireland trade. That's another level of complexity, another set of brand new systems, another set of we don't have information on how it's going to work. So masses and masses for us to do and for every company in the UK to do, to be prepared.
Yes, the one small salvation, thinking back to my days in shipping a long time ago, which is we were then on very much paper-based systems, and we waited to have our documents inspected and stamped, and we presented our documents at the desk and so on. I mean, this time the data processing thing is going to be much faster, so that should work in our favour, shouldn't it?
So there are good things to look at. We know that as an industry, we're flexible. We know that we're resilient. We know that we're problem solvers. So I liken it slightly to, you may be better at me than this. At Christmas, we will open a board game and we'll get out how many pages of instructions for that board game. And can anybody work out how they're meant to play it? Just through reading the instructions, we can't. So I'm imagining that when we get to the 1st of January and the systems start happening in real time, we'll in fact be able to adapt quite quickly because we can see it and understand it through practicing it and through it being real. But I think it's a bumpy January, but then we might be fine from there. But there's also some other surveys. So the Bank of England survey gave me hope, their Monetary Policy Committee survey. They were saying that, in fact, A third of businesses that trade with the EU said they would be fully prepared by the end of the year, with two thirds saying that they will be as ready as they can be. So that's optimistic.
Interesting. Well, I know we wish the sector all the good fortune because our entire economy hinges on international trade, doesn't it? As my late father always reminded me, that unless you dig something out of the ground, make something out of it and sell it overseas, you haven't really made any money. All you've done is moved it around a bit. So the international trade is fundamental for us, especially since we're an island nation and because we have taken this step to leave the EU. And the freight and logistics sector is front and centre, isn't it? It's bearing the whole strain of this because it has got used to reasonably frictionless traffic across the borders. And now it will have to do something quite different. So I think we wish them well, do we not?
We certainly do.
So my guest today has been Elizabeth de Jong, who's Policy Director for Logistics UK. We've had a really nice virtual lunch. I look forward to when we can have a real lunch sometime in the future when it's allowed. But we have today, I think, ended on an optimistic note that we might be just about as ready as we can for whatever the Brexit deal looks like. And as ever, in this particular sector, the freight and logistics sector, a flexible sector full of enthusiastic people to face all the challenges. So, Elizabeth, thank you very much indeed for joining me today and look forward to seeing you again soon.
My pleasure.